Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, September 8, 2014. President Salva Kiir finally signs the media bill into law tomorrow with cameras rolling.
It was misplaced in a backlogged, so it is stayed for all this month, and people are crying that the law was returned to the president. He did not sign. Fortunately, the document was found on Friday.
And South Sudan closes its border as a precaution against the reported Ebola outbreak in DRC.
You can close the main point, but you cannot close the tracks through the bushes, especially Yambio and Ezo.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir is expected to finally sign three media bills into law months after they were approved by lawmakers. Mr. Kiir's spokesman, Ateny Wek Ateny, says the bills will be signed tomorrow at a formal ceremony in Juba. On paper, at least, the bill will broaden the right to obtain information, improve oversight of media, and expand media operations. Philip Thonaleu reports from Juba.
Under the three bills, every citizen, including journalists, is guaranteed the right to obtain official information. An independent body will be set up to oversee journalism content and deal with complaints, and a national independent public service broadcaster will be created. The three media bills were approved by Parliament more than 9 months ago. Ateny says President Kiir took this long to endorse the bills because an official, whom he did not name, misplaced them.
It was misplaced in a backlogged, so it is stayed for all this month. And people are crying that the law was returned to the president. He did not sign. Fortunately, the document was found on Friday, and it is brought to the president.
Ateny says the information ministry plans to organize a workshop to educate journalists on the content of the three laws. Veteran journalist Alfred Taban, who is the editor of the Juba Monitor newspaper and the acting head of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, or AMDIS, says the bills becoming law is a step in the right direction. It says the information ministry should quickly set up the independent body that will oversee both print and electronic media operations in the country.
We have been struggling for these bills for quite some time now, and all the time we ask the government officials, they say yes, they will be signed, but all the time no bill comes up. So I hope this time this is true.
Grant John, a journalist at the government-run South Sudan Television, or SSTV, is skeptical as to whether the new laws will actually be imposed. He says he and other journalists are hopeful they will have an impact on the media environment in South Sudan.
I hope it will not just be on paper. It has to be implemented for it to be called media law anyway. We want to see it working.
Rights groups say the harassment of journalists has increased since the country flung into conflict in December. In July, an official on the Parliamentary Committee on Information said his committee considered the three bills had passed into law without President Kiir's signature because 3 months had passed since Parliament had endorsed them. Under South Sudan Parliamentary Code of Business Conduct, a bill becomes law 90 days after it was approved by lawmakers, unless the President notifies Parliament for any objections. The bill were initially supposed to be signed today at a ceremony that ironically was closed to the media, but Ateny said at the last minute that the three bills will be endorsed by President Kiir tomorrow, and that journalists were welcome to cover the signing ceremony. For BOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
Even with the media bills about to become a law, Information Minister and Government Spokesman Michael Makwi is repeating a warning he made earlier this year to journalists, telling them not to report the views of rebels led by former Vice President Riek Machar. Makwi made the warning at a forum yesterday where journalists, human rights activists and government officials discussed the role of media in nation building. Waki Simon Wudu was at the informal gathering and has this report from Juba.
Makwi says journalists who reported the anti-opposition's views will be considered, quote, rebels and instigators.
If you can go and interview a rebel and then you come and play that material, you come and play it in your media, in your radio, disseminating it to the people. That is not correct.
This is not the first time Makwe has told the journalists not to report the rebels' views. In March this year, he warned journalists not to broadcast or publish interviews with the rebels in South Sudan. He said then that airing rebels' views inside the country would land reporters on the wrong side of the law. Yesterday, he repeated that warning and upped the stakes. He said any journalist who interviews rebels in an effort to balance a story will be considered an agitator against the government.
When you commit such a thing, you are actually disseminating material of the enemy. When you are disseminating the material of the rebels in the country, you are actually agitating the people against the government.
Longtime journalist Alfred Taban, who is the editor-in-chief of the Juba Monitor and acting head of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, or AMDI, says Makwe's warning to journalists is flawed.
This idea of saying you should only report one side, the side of the government, because when you report the rebel side, it's like you are inciting the rebels. This is absolutely nonsense. This is not true.
Taban says South Sudanese journalists are guided by their code of conduct, not by a government order.
Journalists have a duty to their readers and to their listeners, and that means reporting on both sides, the side of the government and the side of the rebels. This is called balancing.
But Makwe insists that any journalist who does not operate within what he says is South Sudanese law risks being taken to court. Makwe's warning comes weeks after National Security Service officers closed down the Catholic Church-owned Bakite Radio after it broadcast the rebel side of a story about renewed fighting in Unity State. The radio's journalists also broadcast the government side, but that was not enough to stop the government from shutting down the station, which is still closed. A South Sudanese legal expert told the VOA in March, when Makwe first said it was illegal to report the rebel side of a story, that South Sudan's penal court does not bar journalists from broadcasting interviews with the rebels. The expert, who spoke from an undisclosed country of exile and asked it not to be named for reasons of personal safety, also said, quote, "Everyone in South Sudan has the right to attain any interview and to communicate freely." For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Sudanese journalists have been complaining about the hostile media environment in the country even before the political crisis that erupted in mid-December. Several media outlets have been warned or raided by South Sudan national security operatives. With me in the studio are two South Sudanese journalists who have filed for us many times here at South Sudan in Focus, Michael Atit and Lucy Pony, both of whom are now fellows at The Voice of America. They have been reporting from Juba and Wau and came to Washington last month under the Atlas Corps program. Welcome to South Sudan in Focus. I will start with Michael. How would you describe the media environment in South Sudan today?
Thank you, John. The situation of the media in South Sudan today is really changed. And maybe before the crisis, it was not as the stage that we are in now. Before the crisis, there were hardly to hear about some journalists detained or some papers confiscated because of a story particularly. But after the crisis, this is when the media houses has experienced a lot of challenges. Many newspapers were confiscated, like Juba Monitor and Citizen. And also, so many journalists were detained and other were even killed, like Isaiah. And some of them are today even still in hiding. We don't know where they are. And so this is the situation that this South Sudanese journalists
have. Let me take you back to the when you were talking about experiencing. Yeah. Can you share your experience or encounter with the security as you cover stories in WoW?
Personally, like I was in WoW, as I started filing stories for VOA from WoW, I had undergone two scenarios. The first one was when I was trying to cover some story about how hotels operate in WoW. And as a result, I was detained for 5 to 6 hours with national security. So they asked me to provide details about my presence in WoW, and also they also took all the copies of my identification cards and all this. So they were like, if you want to cover any story, we are supposed to know as a security. So that was the one story. Mm-hmm. And the second one was recently during the MAPEL's defection. Mm-hmm. And we went as a journalist to go and cover also stories from some newer ethnic group that were fled to the UN compound.
Yeah, so, we did those stories. Let me go to Lucy. Lucy, you had been reporting from Juba until the mid-December political crisis. How are female journalists treated in Juba when they are covering stories? And are they treated differently from men?
Well, I wouldn't say they are treated differently because I think the environment is equally for both female and male journalists. Most importantly, because female journalists usually report on social issues. They don't really get into political issues that would get them on the wrong side of the government. And there have been very little or very few reports about women or female journalists being detained. And so I don't think there's much difference.
And what has your experience been reporting on the political crisis in the country?
Well, it's not easy, but when you're reporting on political issues, you know, you will definitely touch the government on the wrong side. But to be on the safe side, you have to report fairly. You have to balance the story like all the journalists do. I mean, balance the story, get the side of the government, get the side of the opposition, get the side of the civil society, the religious leaders, and most importantly, the civil or the civilians or the citizens of the country who matter the most. You also have to be unbiased, meaning you don't take either sides. And when issues are too complex, you have to bring in an expert or bring in analysts to just give a third feel to the scenario.
All right, Lucy, thank you very much. Those were Michael Atit and Lucy Poniv, VOA fellows, speaking about their experience reporting in South Sudan. Warrap State authorities say more than a dozen people have been killed and at least 20 others wounded in intercommunal clashes between Pandel and Pantuet communities in Luakjuang in Tonch East County. Officials say soldiers have been dispatched to the area to quell the violence. For VOA News, Santino Monud Ayuel reports from Kwajok, Warrap State.
Acting Governor Akin Tongaleo says the fighting erupted on Saturday after a young woman from Panadel eloped with a young man from the Pantuj ethnic community.
Yesterday in the morning, we received information from Tong East that there is a clashes between two sections in the area, which is Pantuj and Panadel in Tong East County, from the in-law of girl, and the father of the daughter refused to receive a diary from the in-law.
Radio Tamadish reports that area youth started fighting with clubs or dinka fighting sticks, but hours later both sides began firing guns at each other. Hundreds of residents have fled their homes and are hiding in nearby bushes and swamps, according to Radio Tamadish. Officials warn that people are far more likely to contract malaria or other tropical diseases by hiding in the swamps or living near dirty water. Aleo says security personnel sent to the area have stopped the fighting and will arrest the perpetrators.
We sent all forces or organized forces to calm down the situation, and the situation now is totally normal.
Akay says he too will personally check on conditions in the area.
I'm leaving this morning to the area of conflict. I say that I call the people in the area, say that I address them properly, not to repeat such a thing again.
Aleo says clashes that emanate from a loved girls are common in culture people of Warrap State. He says there are often disputes of the nature if your daughter marries by force. Sources in the area says intercommunal clashes are common among communities in Tonyes. The Luankot community recently clashed with the Akongte community. Earlier this year, Kongor and Thay clans clashed over the same area. For BOA News, I'm Santino Manuda Iwel, Kwajok, Warrap State.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, efforts to prevent Ebola virus from reaching South Sudan. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite form of artistic expression?
I think I can really do it best when I talk to someone, because they can judge me the way they see me, but when I talk to them, there are certain things they discover about me that they may not know. Yeah, so that's how I think I can do it best.
I like to preach the word of God throughout. This is why my popular music is the song in the church. Those are my popular music.
I always like to express or lightly to listen on traditional song and other international songs. For example, I usually use to listen from my tribemate, the song that they use.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. In a bid to prevent the Ebola epidemic from entering South Sudan, the government says it is partially closing its borders with Democratic Republic of Congo and Central Africa Republic. But as Mungume Debs Rakarinj reports from Juba, monitoring the borders for suspected cases of Ebola won't be easy.
Western Equatoria State Minister of Health, Bono John, says people in his state are living in fear since the deadly Ebola outbreak in neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo 2 weeks ago, where more than 30 people have died of the disease.
A human being is always very sensitive to anything which can take out his life. So people are worried. But we are sure that it is also distant away, and we are taking precaution. Well, that is how life is. One must die, and then they don't need to lose all hope. So we encourage them not to lose hope, with the hope that it will not come.
Last week, the national government decided to partially close border entries with DR Congo and the Central African Republic. Small border entries are now closed. At large border entries, travelers are screened for their temperatures, just as they are at Juba International Airport. John acknowledges that closing borders is not a sure way of preventing people from entering the country.
Of course, it is not that easy, because of the porousness. Our borders are very porous. You can close the main point, but you cannot close the cracks through the bushes, especially the area of Yambio and Ezo.
John says they're asking citizens to be on their guard. South Sudan's Minister of Information, Michael Makweluweth, says all citizens must be vigilant.
This is a question of life or death. Even if your relative sneaks in from any direction, please report that person to the authorities so that he is taken to the right place and examined there and then, so that he is tested. Because if you allow a relative, because he's a relative, to come to you and you accommodate him, then all of you and others are likely to go.
Ebola virus disease, formerly known as Ebola hemorrhagic fever, is a severe, often fatal illness in humans. The World Health Organization says Ebola outbreaks have a case fatality rate of up to 90%. The virus is transmitted to people from wild animals and spreads in the human population through human-to-human transmission. Makwe says there are things people can do to avoid contracting the disease.
One of the immediate sources of acquiring the disease is by eating the bush meat. So people are advised for a time being to suspend eating bush meat, because it is the direct cause of the Ebola.
World Health Organization medical officer Dr. Abnazir Abakar says the organization is working with the government to educate the population about the disease.
When you understand the disease itself, what I mean understanding is how the disease is being transmitted and how the disease is not being transmitted. This is the key. And what needs to be done in case.
Abakar says WHO has trained more than 250 health workers across the country about Ebola. He says every South Sudanese health worker must know how to handle patients suspected of carrying the Ebola virus. South Sudan's National Minister of Health, Riek Gaikok, is in Yambio, where he is meeting with local officials to discuss the possibility of taking additional measures for preventing the Ebola outbreak from reaching South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Mugumedes Ruakarinj in Juba.
The new UN rights chief is describing the crimes against ethnic and religious groups by Islamic State militants as unprecedented and barbaric behavior. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the opening of the three-week Rights Council session in Geneva.
In his inaugural speech to the UN Human Rights Council as High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zayed Raad Al Hussein lost no time in denouncing the increasingly brutal violations being committed against civilians in conflicts around the world. Zayed, who comes from Jordan, expressed alarm at the magnitude of the death and destruction reigning in the Middle East and launched a bitter attack against the Islamic State. He condemned the recent murder of American journalist James Foley and hundreds of other defenseless victims in Iraq and Syria by this militant group. He presented an apocalyptic vision of a world ruled by the militant group, which he referred to as a Takfiri state, that is, a state in which a Muslim accused of apostasy or of no longer being a Muslim must be killed.
It would be a harsh, mean-spirited house of blood, where no shade would be offered, nor shelter given to any non-Takfiri in their midst. In the Takfiri world, unless your view is identical to theirs, and theirs is extremely narrow and unyielding, you forfeit your right to life. There is no love of neighbor, only annihilation to those Muslims, Christians, Jews, and others, altogether the rest of humanity, who believe differently to them.
Zayed recounted a litany of horrors emerging from the escalating conflict in Syria. He noted more than 190,000 people have been killed, and more than half the population, about 9.5 million people, have become refugees or internally displaced since war broke out there in March 2011. He said the appalling atrocities committed by Islamic State in Syria and Iraq could amount to crimes against humanity. He added that the group and other armed groups in these countries must be held accountable for their crimes. He blamed the corrupt and discriminatory political systems in both Syria and Iraq for the crises unfolding in those countries. The High Commissioner also called for an end to persistent discrimination and impunity in the Israel-Palestine conflict, which has led to recurring violence and destruction in Gaza. He said current and future generations of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, have a right to live normal lives in dignity without conflict.
The 7-year blockade must end, and there must be effective accountability for transgressions committed by all parties. On this point, I also note that Israelis have a right to live free and secure from indiscriminate rocket fire.
Turning to Ukraine, the High Commissioner called for the government and armed groups, as well as neighboring states, including Russia, to make every effort to protect civilians in this deplorable conflict. He also expressed alarm at the ongoing fighting in the Central African Republic and South Sudan, and, like his predecessor Navi Pillay, he called for an investigation on Sri Lanka. The new UN rights chief said he supported moves to establish a code of conduct by the permanent members of the Security Council regarding the use of the veto. He said the veto should not be used to block action by the UN body in cases where well-documented atrocities are ongoing. A ministerial meeting will be held in New York on September 25th to debate this issue. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move to Somalia. Human Rights Watch is accusing some soldiers with the African Union mission to Somalia of abusing their power. They are accused of raping and exploiting women and girls on their bases in Mogadishu. The organization has documented 21 cases, but the group notes the real number is likely much higher as many women did not want to report what happened to them. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf has more from our East Africa Bureau in Nairobi.
New York-based Human Rights Watch published a report Monday titled "The Power These Women Have Over Us," detailing how some African Union troops have sexually exploited and abused women who had gone to their camps for aid and medical assistance. Speaking to reporters in Nairobi, Laetitia Bada, a Human Rights Watch researcher, says the AU soldiers relying on Somali intermediaries have used underhanded tactics against their victims.
certain Amazon soldiers from the Ugandan and Burundian forces in Mogadishu over the last year have been abusing their power to sexually exploit, which is basically the use of power, the abuse of vulnerability for sexual favors, but have also sexually abused, raped women and girls on two of their main bases in Mogadishu.
AU troops have been credited with pushing the Somali Al-Shabaab militants out of the capital and much of south and center Somalia, liberating thousands of Somalis from repression by the terrorist group. However, back at their main command bases in Mogadishu, some soldiers and commanders have been perpetrators of crimes and rather than liberators. Badar explains that medical assistance has been misused.
One of the most shocking testimonies in this report was a woman who actually was told, come back to the base to get your medication, and suddenly realised once she found herself in the room of an Amazon soldier, she suddenly realised that she was going to be expected to have sex with this soldier.
Responding to the allegations in the Human Rights Watch report, AU military spokesman Iloy Yao said the Amisom should not be tainted by the misdeeds of a few. He promised a full investigation to hold to account those responsible for abuses against civilian women and girls.
I'm not condoning, I'm not undermining those cases, but the report as it was portrayed does not, you know, reflect the whole image of Amisom. And then we'll work in a close collaboration with the government, our partners, to make sure that such cases are dealt with correctly and the people found guilty can be properly punished.
The United Nations says some 800 cases of sexual and gender-based violence were reported in Mogadishu alone last year. But rights groups say many cases of rape go unreported because women fear being stigmatized and targeted for reprisals. Human Rights Watch is urging AU forces, the UN and Somali government to adopt stronger measures to prevent sexual exploitation and abuses against the vulnerable women and girls. The rights group also calls on officials to create a safe environment where women can come forward and report abuses in a conservative society where sexual issues are taboo. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
With that report from Mohammed Yusuf, we come to the end of our show tonight. We now leave you with the song Sayida by JJD Muzika.
Evangelio, Anamo Maria, Sayida, Maluti.
Tomorrow for another.